The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The United States has dominated international headlines in 2025, from controversial peace deals in Ukraine and Gaza to mass deportations, trade wars and military parades. Donald Trump's return to the White House has been deeply controversial. Joining me to talk about all of this, the biggest moments of the year, and there have been many, Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with the Journal.ie, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute in UCD, and Gina London, former CNN White House correspondent, Sunday Independent columnist. Good morning and welcome one and all, and a very happy Christmas, if that is possible, at the end of 2025. It all kicked off, though, on January the 20th when he was inaugurated for his second term at the White House. And the inauguration speech was an eerie warning of what was to come.
The golden age of America begins right now. From this day forward, our country will flourish and be respected again all over the world. We will be the envy of every nation, and we will not allow ourselves to be taken advantage of any longer. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first.
So did you, Gina, have intimations of what was to come during that speech?
Yeah, 100%. You saw all of those big technocrats, kleptocrats, oligarchs, whatever you want to call them, sitting right behind him when he was giving that speech on Inauguration Day. Of course, Elon Musk had given $270 million to the presidential race and then became the head of Doge immediately. And you'd see the Meta chief and the Google chief and all of those people have been reaping millions. So this has not been Make America First again. It's been Make Trump and all of his buddies first again. And that's what's been happening. So yeah, you saw it right away.
What they used to say about Russia, a kleptocracy.
A kleptocracy, 100%. This is why we say Merry Griftmas instead of Merry Christmas right now.
Merry Griftmas. Scott, when you heard that speech, I mean, people thought, could it be as bad as Trump 1.0, and it turned out to be much worse. But at that moment, remember in the first speech he made for Trump 1, and George Bush was seen to mouth, this kind of crazy?
No, it's going to be way worse, because part of it was, you know, you clip the part where he talks about golden age. But the fact is, from Trump 1.0, he brought in the idea of carnage as well. And the idea was, look, to get to this golden age, we're going to cause a lot more destruction, whether you like it or not. And what was striking to me, in addition to what Gina said, which is not only the fact that it was the tech bros behind him, some of these tech bros basically own the U.S. media. We're talking like Jeff Bezos, Washington Post, Larry Ellison, who owns CBS, the TV network that's about to roll over in face of Trump's pressure. And then it was what happened after the speech that struck me. If you might remember, the weather was really foul in Washington. Mm-hmm. So he went in, they held the ceremony inside, but then they went to some big arena in Washington where you had this big spectacle where he signed this whole series of executive orders. And we're talking about anti-immigrant orders. We're talking about orders ripping apart environmental legislation. And what caught me there is that he had matched the spectacle up to the blueprint. In 1.0, they didn't have the blueprint down for the destruction. Because of Project 2025 and because of key advisors like Stephen Miller, they hit the ground running, which was from day one, we're going to rip things apart.
And remember that Trump denied any knowledge of Project 2025 in the run-up to the election. No, what is that? Never heard of it.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he ever read it, but I'd say he probably had a good idea of the blueprint. To me, the story of this year in American politics has been Trump's megalomania destroying what I think was an extraordinarily electoral success. If you look at what he did in 2024 and winning all the battleground states and assembling a coalition to the side of the Republican Party that I don't think anybody ever envisaged in terms of the white working class, in terms of a vast number of Latinos, in terms of black males, in terms of Asian Americans, a cross-section, and holding on to a lot of people who are traditional conservatives on the basis of tax. He had an extraordinary coalition, but again, his authoritarian instincts, I think, have really allowed him to, you know, they facilitated his sinking. And he's gone way too far for the people who decide elections in the United States, whether it comes to immigration, whether it comes to pushing way too far in terms of, this guy said he was America first, now he's an interventionist. He's alienated all those groups that he brought to his side. So the Republican Party really is looking past Trump at one stage, but still, I am struck by the fact that despite everything, Donald Trump still commands a huge loyalty among grassroots Republicans and still, in the aggregated polling, still has 43.6% of Americans who approve of his job.
Now, Gina, you mentioned Elon Musk, and he became the head of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or it became known by the shorthand of DOGE.
And let me tell you, I'm going to work my ass off for you guys. So, I really will.
Elon Musk, and yet within 8 months, Doge was gone, having done its damage.
Well, that's the thing. I think, to me, the characterization of this almost 11 months, almost a year now that we've got of 2.0 Trump is the swiftness with which things are being done, the executive orders that Scott mentioned, the Doge dismantling of so many different departments and jobs and things at such a pace that Congress can't act. Of course, Congress is narrowly run by the Republicans anyway, but that the law can't keep up, and the judge's orders that come in and try to reinstate things and try to fix things are being held up in that process. So one of the things that's, I think, really striking that happened with DOGE is the USAID was dismantled. And I used to work for USAID years ago. I lived in Egypt and helped run the first ever political poll there. But beyond the political infrastructure that was being put in, the support that was being put in through that soft support of USAID, immunizations and health plans and all around in Africa and other developing countries, over the two decades that they have talked about, almost 2 million lives were saved. Now, Lancet came out last month with a report that said almost 600,000 lives have been lost since USAID was dismantled, and two-thirds of that is children. Yeah. So that's one just of many stark legacies of what this government
has wrought.
Scott,
do you understand why they would want to abandon what was called America's soft power? In other words, America was seen as a benign influence in the world because of the work of USAID, not a malign, which they've now, in the course of a few months, managed to change it to.
Because they don't give a damn about American soft power. They give a damn about a friends and family approach, an authoritarian approach, which rewards them. So what did the Agency for International Development do for them? Absolutely nothing. To add what Gina just said, let me add one other statistic. They got rid of a George W. Bush initiative called PEPFAR for AIDS prevention and AIDS, basically, treatment, which is credited with saving 26 million lives. They are already losing thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives because they slashed that. They went in to other departments with young 18 to 26-year-olds that were allied with Musk, stole government records and stole personal data. Why did they steal the personal data? For the good of American soft power? No, they stole the data because they could use it for themselves. Musk could use it for themselves. Trump's friends could use this for themselves. We have got to start off from this premise that the American system, as we have known it, does not exist. Now, what you have is what is not just authoritarian, but what you call is a plutocracy, that you have a small group who have business interest and who have ego interest, and anything that doesn't fit that, including alliances with Ireland and Europe, those don't matter anymore.
Larry?
Yeah, I mean, I'd largely agree with all of what Scott and Gina said. I mean, this is the ugly manifestation of the America First ideology that Trump has always put forward. The issue is, I think a lot of Americans bought into that at first. They said, look, we like the idea of America First. But then when they get to know and when as they learn about what that all entails and the uglier side of it, which I think Gina outlined very well, then I think that they are becoming disenchanted. And that's why Trump has slid. And again, his political decision making, I take Scott's point about the authoritarian impulses and everything else. But from a point of raw politics, none of it really makes any sense. That's what I try to get my head around, and I can't.
Yeah, I want to come to something that clearly doesn't make sense, and that was so-called Liberation Day. Remember Liberation Day in early April when he talked about reciprocal tariffs and he appeared with his bookies board?
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. Waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Going to make it wealthy, good and wealthy. For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike.
So we are part of the plundering of the United States of America. Larry, we'll stay with you on this. The tariffs, it's dawned on the people that tariffs are paid by the consumer. It has finally dawned on the Americans.
Yeah, I think so. And again, here, there's another political gross misjudgment, in my view. Yeah, in some respects, you can look at global trade, in particular with China, and you can say that, yeah, in some ways, the United States was getting a raw deal. But instead of targeted policies to address that, which I think most Americans would have supported, instead, we have this sort of ridiculous charade of Liberation Day, and we have the president targeting old allies, and in the process, as you say, raising the prices for consumer goods and alienating the very people who struggle and who he got to bring to his side, which was extraordinary. And he's alienated them because they're feeling it in their wallets most.
And he keeps trying to persuade them that prices have gone down. And they know they're the people. He's probably never been in a grocery store in his life.
Okay, one of the farcical moments when he continues to say that affordability, this word, was made up by the Democrats, and that no one even thought about affordability. Well, he's never had to think about affordability, but 60% of the United States lives paycheck to paycheck. Those people are thinking about affordability. Those people are thinking about what's happening at Christmas, and it's not just about pencils and dolls. And the idea of what these people are feeling is why his numbers continue to fall. And Larry mentioned that there's still a strong base, but that basis is fracturing. Mm-hmm. Even when you think about how much the money of the tariffs have not gone to the people, and now he announced that weird primetime Christmas announcement that he had last week, that the people were going to be, the veterans were going to get $1,776 back, and that actually was a housing subsidy amount they were already set to get. People are starting to really get tired of him saying lies and trying to have people believe with his steamroll approach that it's true.
Now, there are so many things during the year turning ICE effectively into sort of his own Gestapo, deploying the National Guard where it had no place in being, all of those kind of things. And there is, I'm just wondering, how many Americans believe he's doing the right thing, Scott? I mean, or do they perceive, like we do, that he's mad? Because he's talking about his wife's underwear the other day.
Yeah, I mean,
in a public speech, come on.
From a public opinion point of view, the latest aggregate of polling is that whereas he had a slight majority who supported it on immigration at the start of this year, he's down now about -7 to -8. So more Americans oppose what he's doing with immigration than support it. But I think what is more striking than that is that Larry mentioned that he had had this coalition that propelled him to power in 2024. Well, of course, Latinos and Hispanics would have been part of that coalition. And that support is now evaporating because their communities are getting hard.
Do you remember the guy whose three sons, I think, were in the Marines? And he was maybe slightly illegal, shall we say, but had lived there for decades, and he's thrown into the slammer. And okay, that's the problem. I mean, those who, Latinos who thought they were really part of the American way suddenly realized their aunt, their uncle, their cousin, their son, their daughter could actually be deported to a place they've never known.
Which is that reality hits when it comes into your neighborhood. What Trump has succeeded to doing is absolutely breaking the idea that there is a moral or an ethical standard in politics. He's absolutely shattered it. But then when you're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, the aim is millions of people to be detained or deported, then that ethical standard is going to come in because you can't just simply sweep away these people, some of whom, as you mentioned, have been here for decades, without affecting neighborhoods, without affecting schools, without affecting churches. But here's where I think we need to go beyond Trump, Pat, and that is, look, Trump's just simply the spokesperson for this. You need to go to key advisors like a Stephen Miller, who has had this as a personal quest to get rid of both undocumented and legal immigrants because, and I will now put this out for us to discuss, I'm going to flag this because it came up in J.D. Vance's speech yesterday, because this is not only an authoritarian government, it's a white nationalist government.
I actually have a clip of J.D. Vance now. He was speaking at Turning Point USA America Fest. Have a listen to what he said.
Kamala Harris opened the border and destroyed the economy. The Trump administration gave you net negative migration and much more job creation. In the United States of America, you don't have to apologize for being white anymore.
So that's it. You don't have to. It's a fundamentally racist regime.
Demagogues try to pit us against them, whoever the them is. And you knew this was coming when Trump was in that debate with Kamala Harris, saying they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. It's people of color. No. And people of color are being rounded up with just profiling. ICE is coming in and sweeping up and putting little children into zip ties. I mean, we've got the documentary evidence of that. And it's happening so fast and so swiftly that you can't even keep track of where these people have gone. Have they gone to El Salvador? Did they go to Alligator Alcatraz? Where have they gone and for how many months? And this type of rhetoric that you're hearing from the J.D. Vance is they're saying it in the open. They're saying the quiet part in the open. And this, though, is where the United States does have an opportunity come the midterms next year to demonstrate that this is not who we are, that we want due process, that we want our education back. We want support for climate. We want support for a process for immigration that can lead to citizenship, that we are a nation of a melting pot. And I think that that's why you saw, even within that conference that you mentioned that J.D. Vance spoke, and there were some conservatives like Ben Shapiro who was talking about the racism of some of the other speakers there. So there's fractionalization that's happening even within that pro-right, ultra-right, mega-right, mega-movement.
Larry?
Yeah, I mean, here's where, again, as somebody who's followed electoral politics my whole life, I hate to see politics being done very badly. There's a market for what J.D. Vance is saying, right? In raw, amoral terms, there's a market for that. But it's a shrinking market. It's shrinking every day. And when you assembled the kind of coalition that Trump did, it is pure stupidity to be putting out what I think is not so thinly veiled racist messaging to a crowd who, of course, the crowd lapped it up. But you got to play to the country and look at demographic change in the United States. Look at the burgeoning Latino population, other ethnic communities growing. You're not going to bring them on side when you say this is a white America. Basically, the issue then becomes, with the midterms looming, you have that on the one side, but the issue becomes with the Democrats. And still, they've stumbled upon to something with the affordability agenda. I think Trump's posturing on that is stupid. They've stumbled into something. I think it's very effective for them. But still, their numbers aren't great. I mean, Harry Enten from CNN has revealed that the Democrats are actually in worse shape now than they were in 2018.
No.
And that's despite everything that we know about Donald Trump and the regime.
No, that's not. Larry, I got to come in here because, I mean, with Harry Enten and CNN, that's only a partial story of what's taking place here. If you take opinion polls, you know, across the board and so on, you know, for what it's worth, they run about 4% ahead of the Republicans in terms of where they are with the midterms. And they have been improving in terms of getting their game together on especially the economy and especially on health. And so we could knock the Democrats for what they did last year in terms of what they did in communication. But I think they are in a better position here if the system isn't
destroyed. Are they winning all those local elections in spite of themselves?
Well, so I would
say no,
because I think, for example, there's been a lot of ease to disparage the Democrats based on, of course, all of the mistakes that happened with the Biden running for president, et cetera, et cetera. But that said, Hakeem Jeffries over on the House minority side has been actually running a strong group of Democrats to build for these petitions of disclosure. So, for example, you've got a vote coming that's being forced against Mike Johnson, Speaker, of, let's back everything that Trump says no matter what, to try to get the extension of the subsidies from the Affordable Care Act coming up in January. And that's the Democrats that are leading that. Now, Republicans have crossed over to help push that petition through. But the Democrats, I think, and if you see from those special elections in the last couple of weeks, they are increasing. I don't think it's despite. I think it's because there is a message of affordability and the working person that is coming through.
Now, all of us on this program have discussed at various different times Russia and the Putin, the compromat potentially, that whether it's about money or the mafia or whatever it might be. And we're not going to belabor that again, but we know that the Gaza peace process is utterly flawed. Hundreds of Palestinians have died in Gaza since the so-called ceasefire, and the Russians are showing no appetite for the European element of Trump's peace plan. They only want Trump's plan, which was written by Russia anyway. So I'm going to park that particular issue because we have to talk about the weekend's events, the publication of the Epstein files. Mm. So he didn't believe them. They were all a hoax. Then he signed on ultimately to have them released when he had no other option. So where are we now, Gina?
Well, yes, another petition of disclosure was what ultimately forced the vote in the House and the Senate and made President, and it was a veto-proof one, so that's why President Trump signed it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have, because they had, his Attorney General, Pam Bondi, had conveniently squirreled it away. Well, now, as required by law, on Friday, things started to come through. Interestingly, required by law, it was supposed to all come out at once, and it's coming out in drips and drabs.
And but massive redactions.
And massive, like black pages of redaction, so-called, to protect the victims, but we all know really what's happening. But there are photos that are coming out, and there's more evidence that's coming out, and there's more and more. And I think the way that you see people supporting the Epstein victims from around the entire U.S., including, don't forget, that one of the stories we should talk about for this year is Marjorie Taylor Greene and her decision to stand with the victims and oppose Donald Trump to the enough that she resigned, and you can debate why she resigned, but people are wanting to see more, and more is coming
out. Okay, I want to play a little clip from Meet the Press yesterday when the Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, was asked about the 15 photographs that disappeared from the Epstein files as originally published, and Todd Blanche said, nothing to do with Trump.
Well, you can see in that photo, there's photographs of women. And so we learned after releasing that photograph that there were concerns about those women and the fact that we had put that photo up. So we pulled that photo down. It has nothing to do with President Trump. There are dozens of photos of President Trump already released to the public, seeing him with Mr. Epstein. He has said that in the 90s and early 2000s, he socialized with him. So the absurdity of us pulling down a photo, a single photo, because President Trump was in it, is laughable. And the fact that everybody's trying to act like that's the case is a reflection of their true motivation.
Okay, and he did go on.
Protest too much.
Yeah, he did. He was asked about it. So you took it down to protect the victims. So that means President Trump was consorting with victims. No. That would be the full context of that clip. Larry.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Trump administration has handled this terribly at every step of the way. And this is something that is going to continue to hurt them, and I think will hurt Republicans ahead of the midterms. Because remember what I suppose in many respects is responsible for Donald Trump's rise. And this is bizarre, but it is a hatred of the elite. Mm. And this is what motivates Americans at every level across the ideological spectrum, is they don't like the elite, especially Americans who are struggling. And what they perceive this as is one rule for everybody else and one rule for the elites. That's why the Epstein story, in my view, has legs. And that's why Trump, I agree with him on one thing, which is when he said Epstein is the man who will never die. Because this has legs because of that deep-seated hatred of lots of Americans for people who are wealthy and powerful and who they perceive play the game by different rules.
But, you know, isn't he his own worst enemy, whatever he's done or hasn't done? I mean, consorting backstage with half-naked women in the Miss Universe competition, talking about women in particular ways. I mean, it is very credible for people to believe that he was up to no good with Epstein. That's his problem.
Well, just a quick reminder, this is a man who was convicted of defamation in connection with a serious sexual assault against the writer E. Jean Carroll in the mid-1990s, and who has been accused by more than 20 other women of sexual aggression. Let's put it that way. That's before you talk about Epstein. There is a document, a little notice document, which has come out because they didn't spot it. They let this one slip through, where Jeffrey Epstein introduces Donald Trump to a 14-year-old whom he is either grooming or abusing at that point, and says, oh, she's pretty, isn't she? Now, I hasten to add, there's no evidence that Trump was involved in any criminal activity with this girl or with others. But what you had was an extension of the cover-up last Friday, because they violated the law. They were supposed to bring out all the documents. If they made redactions, they were supposed to explain why the redactions were made. They gave no context for the documents. And I think what was even more egregious is they tried to distract the media by pointing them to certain photographs. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's Bill Gates. Here's Mick Jagger. Here's Michael Jackson. And here's Bill Clinton.
But they had Bill Clinton with Diana Ross and Michael Jackson and two redacted faces, which turned out to be Michael Jackson's children.
And I think this is one of the things, to Scott and to Larry's point and yours too, Pat, is that the idea that powerful men were with a pedophile, whether or not he was convicted at that point or not, or what have you, and was surrounded by young underage women, they either Were they involved? Were they not alarmed? What was going on? And the Democrats, to their credit, say, let's get it all out. If it's Bill Clinton, if it's Bill Gates, let's get this going. There will be hearings on this.
Final question to all, because we're running out of time rapidly. Will we have, at the end of 2026, still a President Trump, or will it be President Vance? What's your suspicion?
I think he'll still be in. I don't think they'll carry him out of a golden-plated box to not have him be in.
It'll be President Trump unless something terrible happens to him.
My primary concern is not Donald Trump or J.D. Vance. It's the American system. Do you have a decent American system fit for purpose for decency, tolerance, and respect, rather than those at the top who want to destroy those values?
And, of course, the result of the midterms will be in at this time next year, and that may change everything. But it'll be hard to put it all back together again, I suspect.
Yeah, but it's always darkest before the dawn, Pat. And there are good people in America that do not want to go this route.
Scott Lucas, Larry Donnelly, Jane London, thank you all very much for joining us. And I wish you all, if it's possible, to have a very happy Christmas.
And to you.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.